Welcome to season two of Touring the Multiverse. I'm Mieka, and with me today is Casey. It's been a long time since we've toured the D&D multiverse, and Dave and Adam have been wandering around Eberron ever since. I'm not surprised. But Casey and I have been looking into one of the Magic the Gathering settings 5th edition has adopted, and decided that now it's time to talk about the Mythic Odysseys of Theros.
In this episode of our discussion on the Greek-themed setting, we're going to be breaking down the basics of Theros and what you can expect before we launch into the gods, mortals, and monsters that fill this Greek mythology-inspired realm.
Before we jump into it, I want to ask you, way back before we started researching the setting, how familiar were you with Greek mythology and how familiar were you with Theros?
Okay, so admittedly, I actually took Greek mythology in university as like an elective.
Yeah, see, I never did. I wish I did, but I didn't.
Yeah, it was very interesting, and I even still have like the textbook because I'm like, this would just be nice to just have.
Yeah.
Do not really remember much of it. I'm like, yeah, like those names sound familiar, but I lost a lot of it because I won't tell you how many years ago it was, but it was a lot of years ago. And really didn't have a whole lot of knowledge on Theros because I've never like had a campaign relating to that or anything. What about you?
So I didn't take any courses back in school. I think I remember like, what was it, sixth grade? It was like a huge Greek mythology unit in school. And then we all like learned about, you know, the typical stories. But when Lore Olympus came out, and I know there's probably a lot of people on the internet rolling their eyes, but when Lore Olympus came out and like got really big, I got really into Greek mythology. Like, I don't know all of the gods, but I'm very familiar with a lot of like the a lot of the gods and goddesses.
I see. So, is that like a book series? I don't think I know what that is.
It's like a graphic novel
on
like Webtoons. Adam got me, I think, all of the volume. I think he got me the complete set.
Nice.
I think it's the complete set.
Adam's all about collecting all of them. It's like, you can't just have one of the collection.
Exactly. He is a collector. Yay. Yay for me. And my choices. But I love Greek mythology.
It's fun.
And I loved like this book, and I love what they did to like adapt a lot of the, you know, stuff about Greek mythology, but we'll get all into that.
Awesome.
All right, I'm gonna give you a brief overview of Theros and what it's all about. So the thing that everyone needs to know about Theros is this: things believed and dreamed here become real. And so, like, the mortal people have the power of creation. It's not an overnight thing. It takes, like, hundreds of years. So because mortal thoughts and imagination have such power, the gods were dreamed, believed, and narrated into existence. So I thought that was, like, really cool.
Yeah.
Because the mortals believe the gods to be ageless and powerful, they are. And so in order for, like, a god to disappear from existence, it would take, like, all the mortals to, like, come together and, like, will them out of existence, which could take like ages,
and I
don't ever see that happening.
Probably not.
No,
like, if anything, they'll just become like more dormant for a long time, but then it would probably just take a tiny amount of belief to bring them back.
So the gods rely on mortal devotion to stay in power, and if you have devoted followers that are constantly praying and worshiping to you, you'll always stay like relevant. So like, that's the gods' goal, like keep the mortals, you know, believing in us so we can stay like stick around. This is why like a lot of the gods in Theros have champions, but we'll get back to that like in just a minute. Focusing back on the mortals, you have to talk about, of course, fate and destiny. I feel like those two things always come up in like Greek mythology, and it's like all the way through Theros as well. They sort of go hand in hand. Fate is predetermined in Theros by the three sisters, the Fates, and of course we'll cover them much later. But fate is like your life plan. It's all right, so once you're born, you will do all of these like predetermined things unless you decide to break away and become like a hero.
Okay.
Yeah. So like heroes defy fate by taking it into their own hands, and they stray away from the status quo and dive into the unknown. Does that make sense?
And is it because it's because they have received God's favor that's giving them, mm-hmm. it's like giving them the courage to change their fate,
yeah,
and actually deviate?
Yeah, it could be that, like a god just showing up, like literally could just show up and be all like, I want you to be a champion for me. Here's what I need you to do.
Yeah.
And it could be like a farm boy who's always thought, you know, I'm going to inherit my father's farm and I'm going to be a farmer. My kids are going to be farmers. But then one day it's like, oh, I can be a champion. Or, right. you know, I've been called to be a champion.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. that's like a way heroes can defy like their fate.
Okay.
Destiny is like a bit different. It not only affects mortals, but also the gods. So fate doesn't affect the gods. But when it comes to destiny, destiny can affect gods as well.
Okay.
Destiny deals with the following. So it deals with order, hierarchy, relationships between gods and mortals, instinct and impulses that deal with mortal behavior. It's important to remember that mortals can't change destiny, but gods can. Clothis, who is the god of destiny, spins like the threads of destiny from their hair, and they get pretty annoyed by gods who mess things up. Clothis, I believe we're going to talk about them soon. It's going to be one of the gods I touch on, but they are like a pretty like dangerous and serious god from what I've read. I know I'm kind of going off track here, but I'm just so excited about all the gods in this book.
Yeah.
From what I read, they've been kind of laying dormant in the underworld for like ages, and they have just woken up because they're upset with what's going on in Theros. And so it's like kind of freaking out the gods a bit because they're like, what's going to happen? So that's kind of like the thing that's looming over in this book. And so yeah, but we'll get into that later. So that's destiny. Going back to champions, these are mortals who are close to the gods, of course. A god will choose a champion, and that mortal will be known as the champion of so-and-so god. So I was just talking about Clothis, so it'd be like the champion of Clothis. They work as divine agents in the mortal realm, and of course, you know, they fight things. They fight the monsters, and they go out, and, you know, they're the heroes.
Yeah, right? In the name of the god.
Yeah.
Basically, mm-hmm. yeah.
So champions influence the belief in gods, and gods need this constantly. So, you know, you have to keep, like, the mortals talking about you, believing in you and stuff, and champions are, like, that huge talking point in Theros. So for those who wish to become champions and heroes, they tend to aspire to become a specific archetype. And if you're about to run a Theros campaign, I highly suggest that you, like, tell your players to select an archetype. So, the archetypes are as follows. The general, the protector, the vanquisher, the hunter, the provider, the warrior, the slayer, and the philosopher. So, if you, like, if, you know, if we were all playing as characters in a campaign, we would kind of choose, like, you know what? I want my character to be more of, like, the provider type of champion.
Yeah.
Or, you know, someone who's the protector or the warrior. I know for me.
Which one would you pick?
Could you imagine me being like a general? Y'all would just leave. I would be someone low-key, of course, like the provider or like the philosopher. What about you?
So if you're going to play a camp, like put together a campaign, this is kind of in this world of you should have every player pick one of these. This is like part of character creation kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a way to kind of organize like your character because it's almost like you could go off the rails with this.
Yeah.
So like this is a way to kind of get your players to focus in, okay, I'm going to be a champion of this and this is going to kind of be the thing I do.
Right.
You know, throughout this campaign.
This is something you definitely need to think about before your campaign starts. This mm-hmm. is like like session zero conversation. It's like, this is what I need from you.
Starts on page 6 and then it goes to page 9. And they're at the top.
Oh,
those pictures at the top. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Well, I totally love the Slayer or the Vanquisher. This art's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's like it's etched in stone or marble or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would totally be someone that slays or goes to the competition and contest. And
I knew you would be. I'm
like, let's just do this.
Like, Casey's going to be the one, like, yeah, like just vanquishing people and or creatures. And
Yeah. It's like, I'll return with the head of whatever monster. Sure.
100%. All right, so kind of going from that. So in Theros, I'm going to, I guess, take a hard left now. I'm going to talk a lot about fact and myth. They collide very often. True stories often become myths quickly. According to the text, something that has happened 10 years ago can be told to others as, oh my gosh, it happened so many years ago. Like, it happened like 40 years ago. So they're... It's like, Theros is drama, and I'm here for it, of course. While history seems to be sensationalized, I'm going to touch on a few points in history and basically sum them up real quick. You had the Age of Trax, and this is where the Archons of Trax ruled over, like, the humanoid creatures. And in this age, it was quite oppressive to the humanoid creatures. So they were forced into Acronian armies to fight for Agnomachus. So the Age of Trax was, like, very oppressive to, like, all humanoid creatures. Like, I guess you would think all the creatures that we fight in D&D were just, like, pretty much running things in Theros during that time. But then we had the birth of the Polis. So this was the beginning of human civilization. So to finally put an end to the Archon rule, Aphera sent two human heroes to defeat the tyrant at Agnomachus. From this, we get Miletus, Akron, and Scophos. Those were like the cities that came from that defeating that tyrant. And so once he was dead, that's when the birth of like all of the cities happened in Theros, which we'll touch on later. And then we have the Age of Heroes. This age has been filled with heroes and their adventures and stories recorded. And we are currently right now still in the Age of Heroes in Theros. Last but not least, we have languages. We got Common, Giant, Leonin, Primordial, Minotaur, and Sylvan. Other languages include Celestial, Draconic, and Sphinx.
I feel like what will be a very common theme is learning the story and the history and accepting it for what it is. It may be loosely based on fact. It may be embellished. And then as you're navigating this, like if it's your campaign, one of the main things you're hoping to do is build history and story of yourself in history, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to make people talk about you or make your name known.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah, 100%.
It's a different kind of style of play, you know, because it's a very specific kind of directive.
Yeah.
If you want to get the most out of it, I would say.
Yeah, I'll get to this part later, but it did talk about when you are creating your character, you're not focusing on your backstory or your background. I feel like in a lot of D&D, it's like, what's your backstory? Give me, you know, that whole
thing. Yeah.
You're focusing on something totally different. And so, feeds into what you were saying about that.
Right. This is doing champion and heroic things and then talking about them with people to make them into a story or a myth.
Yeah.
Cool.
100%.
Can be whatever you want to be, even if you don't actually be it. You can just start the story on it.
Yeah. Do you have any, like, what inspires you about this? And we kind of touched on inspiration a bit, but what do you think?
Well, I think what's fun about starting something like this is that it does pull you away from, like you said, that classic character creation. Mm-hmm. It gives you a different way of looking at building your character. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is going to be perhaps a little bit more roleplay heavy.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Yes, you're going to have your contests and your, mm-hmm. like, your barbarian style stuff. Mm-hmm. But then it's the storytelling and it's the building, like, your reputation. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about, like, piety and all of that. Yeah. So it's just a different, very different style of game. Yeah. It's kind of like when you're going to play, say, Curse of Strahd. Mm-hmm. Like, if you know that's the thing you're going to play, you're probably going to build a character a specific way.
Yeah.
This takes it even to another level with choosing, like, a specific archetype mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So I think it's fun. And if all your players have never touched this book, it could be a good, like, campaign to play for, you know, a year or two.
Yeah. I like there are so many storylines, I feel, in this book, and there's just so much to play with. I feel like, you know, with Curse of Strahd, there's, you know, a ton to do, and you have, like, you know, the actual, you know, campaign
mm-hmm.
or whatever. But, like, with this book, it's crazy because like, you can go to so many different places, and it's not just like you go to one place and you look around and that's it. Like, you go to the underworld, there are, like, so many levels to the underworld. Even when you go to like Nyx, there's, like, different parts in Nyx, which is the realm of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's just so vast, and that's what I love so much about this campaign, and I want to play it. So Adam, let's get that going. I want to play it. I have so many ideas.
Yeah. It's like, forget about your homebrew for a while.
Yeah, let's just drop into Theros. And, you know, I love that.
Awesome. Well, this book also comes with some new subclasses.
Okay.
So I'm going to go over two new subclasses that come out of this book. The first is for the Bard with the College of Eloquence. Our current campaign has three bards, multi-classed bards,
yep.
for two of the three. So I feel like you will enjoy this, and I don't know. This is the subclass for your most flamboyant role-playing bard.
Mm.
Yeah. So should you choose this subclass, you will master the art of oratory. And this is perfect for those who love the roleplay aspect. Like I said, you are persuasive with logical arguments that can sway even the most stubborn of audience members. So you are the spokesperson. You are giving the speeches. You are telling the story of your party or one of the party members
mm-hmm.
To build that case. And it can loosely be based on fact. It doesn't, you know?
Love that.
Yeah. And so at third level, when you choose the College of Eloquence, you gain Silver Tongue. So this, when you make a persuasion or deception check, you can treat a d20 roll of 9 or lower as a 10. So that's pretty powerful, because normally if you go into being a bard, your persuasion and deception modifiers will be quite high already.
Oh, gosh,
so this means it's always going to be 10 plus your modifier.
Okay.
So that helps a lot with those two checks.
Mm-hmm.
You're also going to get what's called unsettling words. So as a bonus action, you can expend one use of your bardic inspiration and choose one creature you can see within 60 feet of you. And rolling the bardic inspiration die, the creature must subtract the number rolled from the next saving throw it makes before the start of your next turn. So this is, as a result of your convincing argument, you actually cause the creature to doubt itself. Oh. And so the bardic inspiration becomes, like, a negative.
Oh my god!
So they're like, wait, maybe I don't know that as well as I thought. And so then you make them roll the bardic inspiration dice and minus it off their saving throw. So, yeah.
That's my kind of... That's my kind of... ability. I love that.
Yeah, it's a D. It's like kind of like a debuff with mm-hmm. using your words.
Yeah.
So I thought that was clever. Uh-huh. Then if you reach sixth level, you gain unfailing inspiration. So you are so persuasive and inspiring that when a creature adds one of your bardic inspiration dice to its ability check, attack roll, or saving throw, and the roll fails, the creature can keep the bardic inspiration die anyway. So that you can use it, and if you still fail, you get to just keep that die. It's not used up.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah.
And you also gain universal speech. So you can use your action to choose one or more creatures within 60 feet of you, and equaling your charisma modifier, you can, for 1 hour, have those creatures magically understand you. So regardless what language you speak in your speech, they will understand what you're saying.
Mm.
So you can, you know, persuade the masses of some random race that, like, no one speaks the language. This gives you the chance to choose creatures up to your charisma modifier to understand you.
Okay.
So you can only use this once per long rest unless you want to expend a spell slot to do so again.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all about persuasion and giving, like, yourself a better advantage or your teammates better advantage.
Me.
Yes.
I'm like, this is what I would choose.
I was thinking about you all the time. Yeah. So finally, at 14th level with this subclass, you gain infectious inspiration. So when you successfully inspire someone, your eloquence can now spread to someone else. So when somebody uses the bardic inspiration you gave them on ability check, attack roll, or saving throw, and the roll of succeeds, you can use your reaction to give bardic inspiration die to another creature within 60 feet of you. They must be able to hear you, of course. This is all about, like, speaking. But it doesn't, you don't have to expend any more inspiration uses. So it essentially, if your bardic inspiration causes them to succeed, you get basically a free inspiration to hand out.
Okay.
And so it doubles your number of bardic inspirations, and you just have to use your reaction. So it's pretty great. The amount of times you can do this, again, is up to your charisma modifier. So there's a max limit.
Mm-hmm.
But again, all of these things are based on your charisma modifier, which is going to be your highest stat.
Yeah, it's going to be like so high.
Yeah, like you might get 5.
Yeah.
You know? And you regain all expended uses of this when you finish a long rest. So, so my brain goes to, you have seen A Knight's Tale. It's like a really old show, but it has Heath Ledger in it. And it's this wild, like, medieval rock type show movie from, I don't know, it's probably like 15 years old at least.
I think I've heard of it. I might have seen parts of it.
You should watch it. You and Adam should pick it up and just, like, have a look, because it is so entertaining. I can watch this show at, like, any time.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this character in that show named Chaucer, and he is, like, so they're doing, like, jousting.
Uh-huh.
And so he introduces the champion at the event, at the contest. And so he's, like, super flamboyant about it. And, like, everybody loves him. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, most of what he says is complete bullshit.
Yeah.
So
you are just loving it.
Yes. And it's super entertaining. And you, like, can't help but, like, just believe them and support his champion. So I feel like this is perfectly that. Like, if you are inspired by a character like Chaucer, this is perfect. Like, you could build that character using this subclass.
Easily, it sounds like.
Yeah. And then other players may love you and may hate you. Who knows? All right, so the next subclass introduced in this book is for the paladin. This is a new oath, the Oath of Glory. Makes sense for this book. Paladins who take this subclass wholeheartedly believe that they are destined to achieve glory through heroic acts. They train incessantly along with their companions so that they are ready for when destiny calls.
Of course.
So there are four tenets of glory that the paladin lives by for this one. Actions over words. This is like opposite the bard. They strive to be known by glorious deeds, not words. Mm. So people talking about what they did, not what they said.
Right.
Challenges are but tests. They face hardships with courage and encourage your allies to face them with you. So they're like the bolstering, like, we can get through this. Come. And like, just like rallying the troops. Yeah. And like, yeah. Hone the body. So like raw stone, your body must be worked to so its potential can be realized. You must be ready for your destiny when it shows up. Oh, man.
Oh.
And then discipline the soul. You must marshal the discipline to overcome failings within yourself that threaten to dim the glory of you and your friends.
Okay. This is like a lot of work.
Yeah. This is like, you can't be sad about your family history drama. It's like, let that go. This is your purpose.
Like, you need to focus.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you forget about the things that you failed, mm-hmm. you know? Oh, man. Again, if this is in your party, oh, I hope there's some balance.
You need, like, a good person
yeah.
to play for the Oath of Glory. You need, like a strong role player at the table to do that. Oh, my gosh, that would be...
Yeah, totally. So, like with all paladin oaths, you gain oath spells. So at 3rd, 5th, 9th, 13th, and 17th level, you gain spells. These are very champion-like or god-like spells, such as Guiding Bolt, Enhance Ability, Protection from Energy, Freedom of Movement, and, like, Flame Strike. So it's all, like, energy-based or, like, yeah. protective or powerful. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of spells you're going to get with this oath. You also gain Channel Divinity options at 3rd level. So Channel Divinity is something that comes up with, like, all of the paladin archetypes or, like, oaths and domains. It can be used a limited amount of times per long rest, depending on your level. You can use it to, for this oath, use Peerless Athlete. Not fearless, peerless athlete. So this is, as a bonus action, you can augment your athleticism, giving yourself advantage on athletics and acrobatics for 10 minutes. Then you can also carry, push, drag, and lift twice as much weight as normal, and your long and high jumps increase by 10 feet. So this is like you're about to go into a contest and you're going to be challenged with some sort of athletic thing. Mm-hmm. You do this peerless athlete, and then everything is bolstered.
Okay.
You also can use Inspiring Smite. Gotta love the smites for the paladins. Oh, yeah. So this one, immediately after you deal damage to a creature with your Divine Smite feature, you can use Channel Divinity to, as a bonus action, distribute temporary hit points, 2d8 plus your level in this class, between the creatures that you, however you like. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get to, it's like you reap the benefits of dealing damage with Divine Smite, and you take that, like, basically temporary hit point energy and give it to people. So it's kind of just like, yes, you're...
Yeah. You're like, take some.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty, like, helpful. Like, 2d8 plus your level is, like, it will That's be a decent amount.
Oh, yeah.
So if one of your players is about to go down or has gone down, you could potentially give them, like, double-digit hit points back temporarily. Mm-hmm. All right, so at 7th level, you gain Aura of Alacrity. So this increases your walking speed by 10 feet. And if you aren't capacitated, the walking speed of any ally who starts their turn within 5 feet of you also receives the 10-foot benefit until the end of that turn. When this actually boosts up when you reach 18th level, so that the aura around you increases the speed for creatures within 10 feet of you. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a unique one where, like, if say your melee fighters and like your melee players mm-hmm. need to get somewhere fast, like yeah. go right up to your paladin here mm-hmm. because you can then move 45 feet instead of 35 feet or 40 feet instead of 30 for okay. that round. So it's kind of like, okay, and it's same. It's like rallying the forces yeah. and it's like, let's go. And mm-hmm. then you bolster them with faster walking speed and you yourself get it.
Okay.
So at 15th level, you gain glorious defense. So when you or another creature you can see within 10 feet of you is hit by an attack roll, you can use your reaction to grant bonus to the target's AC against the attack, potentially causing the attack to miss. The bonus is equal to the charisma modifier. So this could be potentially like a plus 5. Mm-hmm. If the attack misses, you can then make one weapon attack against the attacker as part of the reaction. This is as long as the target is within your weapon range. Mm-hmm. You can use this feature as many times as your charisma modifier, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. So it's like that it's a massive defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. You can actually protect somebody that's within 10 feet of you mm-hmm. and potentially cause them not to get hit anymore. And okay. if you do that, you get to then attack. Ooh. So it's pretty cool. You get to 15. That. Level. Mm-hmm. And finally, at 20th level, you are a living legend. You can empower yourself with living legends, whether fact or fiction, of your great deeds. As a bonus action, you gain all of the following benefits for 1 minute. You are blessed with an otherworldly presence and have advantage on charisma checks. Once on each of your turns, when you miss with a weapon attack, you can cause that attack to hit instead. It's just like, no, I'm hitting.
that's powerful.
20th level. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you fail on a saving throw, you can use your reaction to re-roll it, and you must use the re-roll. So this feature can only be used once per long rest, unless you use it as a 5th level spell slot to use it again. Okay. So once you're at 20th level, like, mm-hmm. you've got all the spell slots you're ever going to get. Yeah. So if you want to hit this more than just once, you mm-hmm. can use a spell slot to do so.
Okay.
So to me, this absolutely looks like a Spartan warrior or a Valkyrie. Mm-hmm. Like, here is the art.
Yeah.
Is that...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, it is your champion, your savior, mm-hmm. your protector, your...
Like, they have been studying since birth to be this great champion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, their whole purpose mm-hmm. is to just be ready for their destiny.
Yep. All they care about.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a lot of details. There's a lot of aspects to the features you get with many mm-hmm. different levels, but very, very cool.
Yeah. I'm, like, going into, like, favorite aspects and details. I do like that bard one. What was the doubt thing called again?
Oh, the unsettling words.
I would still use that. I love that.
Yeah.
And then, again... In Theros, there's like lots of room to be extra, and so that's what I like about it. Because even down to, you know, things that you can do to your abilities and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, because, like, imagine if you were watching your champion, mm-hmm. like, in a contest, and you are, like, just yelling out from the crowd or whatever. Like, you can yell at the person they're fighting, the creature mm-hmm. they're fighting, and potentially do unsettling words.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make then the DM roll for that character a bardic inspiration dice. And if, you know, one of the attacks on them requires a saving throw, they have to roll the dice and minus it from their saving throw. So, like, you can influence a lot by mm-hmm. using your bardic abilities versus just, you know, some, like, ranged spells to bolster or debuff. Right. So it's kind of a cool extra thing.
Yeah.
I like it. That was the best aspect of that part of the subclass.
All right, so now we're going to transition into some heroic drive. So
heroism.
All right, so if you want to be a hero, you got to take the following into consideration. Theros does something a little different from your typical D&D. Instead of your drive or ideal being from your character background, they want you to focus it more so on a god. Having a connection or a bond as something that motivates you in your character is a necessity when it comes to character creation here. Then, of course, you have to have that tragic flaw. What is it that makes you act against what your goals are, or like what your focus is?
Okay.
Like, you know, it's very popular, I think, in maybe across all mythology to have that tragic flaw within your character. And it doesn't have to be extreme either. It can be something small, like maybe it could be, well, I was going to say hubris, but like, you know, your pride can get in the way, like a whole bunch.
Okay.
Or like maybe you're holding a grudge. That type of flaw. Or if you can think of something even more crazy, that would be.
Yeah, what comes to mind is like, you know, Achilles' heel, where mm-hmm. it's like immense power, but then that damn heel.
Yep, it's that one thing. Once you have your hero developed, adding in a supernatural gift is fitting, and this works as like an aid to help be successful. These gifts can come in the form of like abilities or weapons, and I'm not gonna break all of them. You can actually find like the list of supernatural gifts starting on page 12. They've already covered this in the podcast, so I'm not going to break it down, but working with your DM is also very helpful in deciding your like specific gift, so make sure you do that if you're like a player.
That's the fun part.
I didn't go over a whole lot, but this is that part where it's like your background doesn't really matter here. Mm-hmm. It's more so like your beliefs almost matter more so than like where you come from.
Yeah, it's again like doing that like approaching character building differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know from personal experience when I was building like my very first characters, when it came down to the parts of the ideals, flaws, and mm-hmm. all of that, it was so easy just to skip it. To be like, I don't really know, and I could roll. There's always like a table that you mm-hmm. could roll just to get what you want to fill in.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a hand wave where this doesn't really come up. It's fine. But in playing in this world, that is what's really important. That is actually what matters more.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. It's just honing in on different aspects of character creation that maybe you wouldn't in another mm-hmm. campaign. So,
and I really think that's needed too, because like, you know, we're so used to the, you know, well, this is my backstory and I need you to listen to it, and you know, and I think this pushes players to kind of think a little bit more about like who you want to be or how you want to play the game, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. And like your flaw potentially could, it may not be massively detrimental, but it could come up in every session because mm-hmm. you're going to play your character and remember the flaw you have. Uh-huh. And your gift is probably going to be hugely beneficial in every in every single session you play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you want to make sure it makes sense.
Yeah, you have that balance.
Yeah, okay. Cool. Well, speaking about backstory and background, mm-hmm. This book brings out a new kind of background to choose. So I'm going to start off with the story about the myth of the Eroan Games. So many athletes have become legend through competing in Akron's world-renowned annual contest called the Eroan Games. The book describes some myths of the Eroan Games, including a famed wrestler named Lanathos, who bested all competitors, including taking an entire day to defeat a wild Acroan bull.
Hmm.
Then there is the Pancratius Nymocene, who threw her rival at a cyclops after the cyclops so rudely interrupted her contest. Then she proceeded to break the cyclops' neck. definitely a story that lasts ages.
Yeah.
Most notably, however, is the victory of Akron's hunter, Arissa. She had achieved second place in the contest, and while waiting to receive her award, saw an infant get snatched by a Nyxborn bat creature in the crowd.
Ooh.
She threw her javelin an impossible distance, skewering the creature and then catching the infant as it fell from the sky.
Oh, okay.
This gained her the highest of respect from fellow competitors, and she gained citizenship among the Ekroan Lectoi.
Hmm.
So this is the perfect long-term goal for a player character, potentially, and perhaps following in the family footsteps that, like, competed in these games is a good topic for, like, downtime. I feel like it's like, oh, so what's your story? It's like, oh, well, I am training to, you know, go into the rowing games next year. You know, it's like gonna be a topic, and I feel like everyone's gonna know of these games.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fun little kind of side history thing.
Yeah, a little thing in like, could be like a big forefront thing in your campaign, or like a little background thing that's, you know,
totally
always going on.
Because you could also drop it in, and then if the players, like, love it,
mm-hmm.
host it.
Yeah.
Have it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that in mind, you can choose an athlete background. So, this is new. This gives options to heroes who don't necessarily want to focus on, like, the worshipping of the gods and deities and Theros and want to do the battling. So, as you'd expect, it gives your character the opportunity to seek glory through discipline and physical prowess. This would be so aligned with the Paladin Oath. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oath of Glory. This is also, like, in our life, I feel like this is your CrossFit addict, like, who wants to push your physical limits, compete and perform in front of a crowd, wants the tales of your athleticism to precede you, and you typically will congregate with others with this background, always, like, competing and commanding respect for what you have done.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, it's the big eye roll a lot of the times, but then also the swoon. It's like, whoa, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're into that, this could be a fun background to play.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you get? So you get skill proficiency in acrobatics and athletics.
Mm-hmm.
You get to pick one additional language of your choice. You have tool proficiency in land vehicles. And for equipment, you get to pick a bronze discus or a leather ball.
Okay.
A lucky charm or a past trophy. A set of traveler's clothes and 10 gold pieces in a pouch. So it's like you get to carry around your like sports equipment and then a note of like when you did really good at that.
Yeah.
And then you just have clothes and some gold.
That's a trophy for me.
Yeah. It's like, have I shown you my trophy? Or let me get it out.
I would be so tired of that character.
Yeah. Every
tired.
Damn campfire, it's like,
they
do
just
not.
Bring it out and just slam it down. It's like, all right, we get it.
Yes, yes. Oh, Dan better not ever play this.
No, we already know he is.
Don't pick this background, dude. But, yes, yeah, so the athlete will have a favorite event and a favored event in competition. So the book allows you to choose that, or you can roll a d8 and choose from a table. So the options are, as you would expect, like wrestling, chariot racing, and there's even something called hoplite race, which is racing in full armor with a unit. So it's like, all right, they have spent their last 20 years of their life running endlessly in their armor together. Okay, like, you win.
Yeah, but like,
that is their event. Yeah, so you can get really creative with this if you want.
Yeah.
You also gain the feature called Echoes of Victory. So where you have a fan base, If you travel within 100 miles of where you grew up, there's a 50% chance you can find someone who admires you and is willing to provide information or temporary shelter. You may also partake in athletic events in downtime that can increase your lifestyle and may gain you some additional coin and certainly reputation.
Okay.
So this is that, hey, this is kind of a more fun downtime thing. It's like, let's not necessarily go find the pit fiend ring, but let's see if there's like some sort of more structured competition that, you know, you can go place bets on and then like participate in and win some coin.
Okay.
And of course, you're going to want to just love looking and finding somebody who knows who you are. It's like, do you know who I am? It's like, oh my God, you're so-and-so. Mm-hmm. That's great. Do you need anything? Do you need a place to stay tonight? And it's like, in fact, I do with all of my
family members. It's like, oh my God.
Can you show us your trophy?
Yes. And the rest of the party is like, oh.
It's like, but I'll allow it because I don't want to sleep outside again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So if you need additional inspiration for building out your character with the athlete background, like many background descriptors, this book offers four tables for you to roll your personality trait, ideal, bond, and flaw. And like Mieka just talked about, these are actually more important to pay attention to in the world of Theros.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can all relate to this in we know somebody in our life who is this or has this, or a character in a movie or parts of history was like, oh yeah, this makes so much sense to be part of this book.
Yeah, and like, you know, I know I was kind of rolling my eyes at it. It is such like a fun type of character to play.
Yeah.
Especially in this world.
Because they can't help it, especially if you're doing something like pairing it with the Oath of Glory.
Mm-hmm.
All they know is to be really, really good at wrestling or really good at boxing. And that is how they're going to get known and get that piety with their god.
Exactly. Like, they are... It's like, I have respect. There's respect there.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh my gosh. It's a lot of energy, too.
Yeah.
I feel like we kind of touched on, like, you know, plot ideas a little bit. Maybe not. Do you have any plot ideas? Or...
Well, this, I think, this is perfect to you. Like, it doesn't make sense for this to align with, like, more of the bard subclass or something like that.
It is with
your competitor and your avenger and all of those kinds of archetypes. And so I feel like if you wanted to give... your athleticism characters the space in the campaign absolutely have some sort of big contest.
Yeah.
Even if you want to just be inspired by the Eroan games and then create something that makes sense for you.
Yeah.
Sure. Bring in some really crazy monsters, bring in some ogres, bring in some giants, have some crazy weapons, and just do some sort of gladiator style shit.
Let
them have fun with that. And so that could be a really fun plot to have for a session.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, guys, we're fighting today.
That would be so
we're doing
fun.
Combat. And then you have your bards that can still participate because you can do the unsettling word and all of the things that are ranged. And so that's what I would do to try and, like, pull lots of role-playing, but then this would pull that battling if you haven't done it in a while in sessions.
I did that. I remember when I was doing my one-on-one campaign with Adam, one thing I do remember from that campaign was it wasn't these games, but there were like games going on. And of course I tried to avoid them.
It's like, I'm not going near there.
But like, I was forced into it and I actually had a lot of fun. And like, I remember like fighting like different, monsters. Like, they would drop a monster in and like, I would defeat them. And it was a lot of fun just battling in that like one-on-one type of situation. So like you said, maybe making like a session all about these games and just having your players just go through them be a lot of fun.
Yep, and you could have some betting going on. Maybe your party needs to really make some coin, and so you're going to send some of your, you know, your champions in. They're going to ask favor of their god, and who the hell knows what happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of fun. Well, we covered quite a bit today, and we have covered a lot of aspects of this kind of world in other episodes. So I'm just going to run through, without having to repeat a lot, this is where you're going to find so many details. There's so much interesting and flavorful monsters and discussions in Theros. And so here is a list of other episodes from other series where we've covered Theroan topics in the past. Adam, Dan, and Dave covered Theros by the broad strokes in episode 80 of the main podcast. Adam covered the Typhon in episode 99. Dan skimmed off the Ironscale Hydra in the post-credit discussion of Draconic Creatures in episode 128. Kyle talked all about the Colossus of Akron in episode 228. Adam, Brad, and Tyler went over the Archons, their mounts, and the Ashen Rider in episode 234. We've also covered a lot of different playable races. Episode 75 covered humans in D&D. Episode 220 dug into Leonin. Episode 237 focused on centaurs, minotaurs, and satyrs. And episode 193 dove into Tritons. We also covered everything there is to know about Tritons and their monster stat blocks in episode 119. Megan and I covered the Doomwake Giant and the Hundred-Handed One Giants in episode 12 of our Giant series. The ladies of It's a Mimic covered the massive undead guard of the underworld called the Phylaxia in episode 9 of the Undead series. We also dedicated entire episodes of the Undead series to the Returned and the Edelans. And Adam, Jeff, and Pepperina discussed the mechanics and options for blessings and other supernatural gifts in episode 229. If that wasn't enough, patrons will be able to listen to an upcoming episode of Legend Lore, where two of the hosts will break down mystic odysseys of Theros and the quality of the published book itself.
As much as previous episodes have done a great job going over these, I think it's worth discussing the lore and functions of the playable races when they're in Theros specifically, because those episodes focus on generic campaign usages or discussions about the Forgotten Realms. Also, that brief info dump about the Ironscale Hydra was a little too brief for me. So, in future episodes, we'll add new info or different takes on those topics as they come up.
But for now, we're going to wrap up the first episode in our monthly discussion on Theros. Don't forget to check out some of the other series on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and other podcast apps, and become one of our patrons to get access to bonus episodes, book reviews, discussions on homebrewing details, and the It's a Mimic campaign builder.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Touring the Multiverse on the It's a Mimic channels. If you'd like to support us, we have a donate button on our website, itsamimic.com, a store with some It's a Mimic merch, and a Patreon. But one of the best things you can do is share, like, subscribe, comment, leave reviews, and make posts about It's a Mimic and this series. Engagements like that help us create more content for you to consume. But even if you don't, I want to say thanks for listening to It's a Mimic, where you never know what you're going to get.